strong nation, a strong democracy, is one where every child can benefit from the very best that our nation has to offer. And that, to me, is a vision worth struggling for.
That wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints.
Spirit, I speak with Angela Yarber, creator of the Holy Women Icons Project.
We have these bold, brave, dancing, singing women who have created ritual and liturgy and leadership within their traditions, and yet whose names we do not know, whose stories we don't get to hear. And for me, that is part of the personal side of why I paint these icons, why I write about their stories.
Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
I'm Sonny Blechinger, host of The Staple. Each episode presents an audio portrait of an artist of varying stripes. Anyone from novelist Alexis Smith.
I just want to make jam. Like, pick berries and make jam.
To bar trivia host Roy Smallwood.
I'm doing it to sustain myself and to sustain my mind.
Poet Trevino Brings Plenty.
The difficult work is working towards peace.
Or short story writer Jacob Aiello.
Most people who have OCD had an alcoholic figure in their life.
We interview martial artists.
In some ways, you're learning to train for a nightmare.
And artists of protest and community organization.
The best organizers were people's moms.
Our next episode will feature the 2017 Oregon Book Award nominee, Martha Grover.
I was in a place emotionally when I met this guy that I was just set up like pins and he was just ready to knock it down, you know?
To listen, go to kboo.fm/program/staple and click on any episode, or all of them.
And this is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:01 a.m. coming up on Radio Geekly. The discussion continues on gatekeeping and the oppression of people of color in geek culture, so stay tuned to your community radio.
This is Merrick Monroe, and you're listening to a Radio Geekly.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of A Radio Geekly. I'm Just Jess, and I am joined in the studio by fellow collective members Jenna and David. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
If you could give me a three-word phrase on how you're feeling today, because we've got a lot to talk about, so no time for rambling. Three-word phrase. Ready, Jenna, go.
Icy, tired, geeky.
Doesn't have to be a haiku, but, you know. David.
Chipped some ice.
Hey, there we go. Yes, it
we
is icy
theme.
Out there. It is a theme. Yes, hopefully all of you are staying safe out there today. We got a pretty heavy topic to continue in our discussion on gatekeeping, but I thought before we start into the deep discussion, we wanted to bring to light, you know, some things that are going on in the world. A couple weeks ago, you might have known that we had a new presidential inauguration, and with that came some protesting in all ways, shapes, and forms. So what better way for us to give some insight into protesting than with a little Futurama philosophy, or Futurama-losophy, future philosorama. Anyways, let's take a listen to what they had to say.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, 100110, hey, hey, ho, ho.
Welcome to Portland, I mean Futurama, where we like us some protests. For today's Futurama philosophy, I decided to visit the subject of protests.
My fellow Earthicans, we enjoy so much freedom, it's almost sickening. We're free to choose which hand our sex monitoring chip is implanted in. And if we don't want to pay our taxes, why, we're afraid to spend a weekend with the pain monster.
See you April 15th, folks!
I was surprised at just how often protest and activism fuel the plots of the shows I love. Sometimes it's great satire.
I'm rebelling with my brother devices. Isn't that right, comrade greeting card?
The bourgeois humanism virus on the hard drive of the working robot.
And other times, a little weak, to say the least.
I'm Frida Waterfall, leader of the Green Yurita Eco-Feminist Collective, and we will not let you mandoze this beautiful gyno desert.
But what makes these stories effective is their ability to springboard into issues relevant in today's world under the subversive guise of entertainment. We're talking First Amendment.
Yes, fellow patriots, I ate your flag, and I did it with pride. For to express oneself by doing a thing is the very essence of Freedom Day.
Animal rights.
You're vegetarians. Who cares what you do?
Privacy.
That's why we're introducing this ballot initiative to legalize robosexual marriage. Yeah!
The environment.
When you were planning this peace ring, didn't you realize spaceships can move in three dimensions?
No, I did not.
Basically, any issue that an idea-stricken group of liberal writers wish to mine for comic merits gets thrown at us. And I love it. Because no matter how dark and weighty things may get...
Is it possible that all this slavery and oppression is schmutzing up our freedom lesson?
We can always find something to laugh at.
That's why I love Earth. You can do what you want, and no one makes you feel guilty because no one cares.
We're not listening!
That's what I'm talking about.
And there's still a lot to laugh about. When we're not crying. This has been Futurama Philosophy.
Oh my gosh, that was hysterical.
Yes.
That was great, David.
Nice work. I think it touched on more things that actually did happen.
Yeah, as like a super fan of the show, I never really realized how many episodes are dedicated to protesting the government and like fighting for their rights or what they think are their rights in the future.
I think when they do like shows like this, they set up a good dynamic of we want to talk about this issue and then we want to say, you know, have like opposing viewpoints, put some humor. But in the end, the message is clear where they're standing, you know, and it's usually on the side that we agree with. So, you know, I think it's good social commentary and try to get some humor out of it at the same time.
I also just say I really liked how you included the one about where they're trying to save the penguins and the spaceship doesn't realize they can just fly up and down in any direction they want.
It's ridiculous. I love it. Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's nice that we can actually find some humor in the disparity of our nation.
I think we need to take up the 10011 chant at the next protest.
Ah.
We should just do it all in binary and see how many people get it. And we just like have a bunch of Futurama fans just like... protesting with us.
That would be great.
Geeking out.
Oh, man. So with that, we're going to transition into our talk for today. Thank you, David, for that piece. It was nice to bring a little lightness to the table.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be continuing on our discussion of gatekeeping. And if for our listeners that haven't been able to check out, I encourage you to go to our KBOO page and listen to parts 1 and 2 because we focused on different communities that have expressed just frustration and challenges when it comes to gatekeeping. We talked about women geeks that are being challenged, and last month we did individuals in the LGBT community, and today we're going to focus on people of color. And I wanted this to be a platform so that several different voices can be heard and personal stories can be expressed, but in a way that is more informative and educational, because I think that's also a key thing to recognize is that a lot of people don't know that others are being oppressed because they don't experience it themselves or they choose to overlook it. And so I think it's great that we can have these conversations to bring to light what's going on in the community. And so I'm really excited to get started on this. I wanted to play firstly a discussion that I had with Michi Troda. She is a managing editor for Uncanny Magazine. They focus on sci-fi and fantasy stuff, but she is a female identified Filipina geek and is doing a lot of things in the geek community. And I spoke with her about her experiences with gatekeeping, what that means to her, and ways that people can change their viewpoints and realize that gatekeeping is still real. It's not just a myth or something that you see on Revenge of the Nerds, but it's present. And there was so much content that was talked about that I'm actually going to have this as a two-parter. So this is only going to be part one that you're hearing today on today's show. And if you want to hear more, I will be uploading the second part onto our webpage later on today. So stay tuned to that. But for now, let's take a listen to my interview with Michi Trotta. Hello, Michi. How are you today?
Hello. Thanks for asking me to be here.
So great. I'm just so excited to speak with you and get your insight on gatekeeping. But for those listeners that might not be familiar with what you do and how great of a geek you are, why don't you take a minute or two to kind of describe some of the things that you're involved with?
So I think the overarching theme for what I do in geek culture is because I wear a lot of hats. I love being part of community organizing and community building within geek culture. I'm doing that primarily through Uncanny Magazine as the managing editor. We're a magazine that is dedicated to bringing science fiction and fantasy poetry, fiction and nonfiction that makes you feel, that can demonstrate the wide variety of perspectives and creativity that is currently going on in science fiction and fantasy. I'm very proud to say that we won our first Hugo Award last year, and that ended up making me the first Filipina to ever win a Hugo Award, which I'm very, very proud of to be able to say. And in Chicago, I am also the president of the Chicago Nerd Social Club Board of Organizers. We're an online group that we do meetups in the city. We have a Facebook community with a code of conduct and active moderators. And when I have my spare time, I'm also performing as a fire performer in cosplay with the Rax Geek Belly Dance and Fire Performance Troupe. So that's a lot of the stuff that I do. I also write. I also appear on panels. And hopefully I will be able to start delving back into fiction writing as well as more nonfiction writing soon.
Yeah, that's a lot of hats. And that's so awesome to hear that geeks are into a lot of different things and can actually accomplish in a lot of different realms. And so that's really cool to hear that. It's not you, oh, I just have a day job doing this, but it's like, no, I'm actually involved in all of this stuff, and it's amazing.
My day job is actually pretty nerdy, too. I work for Encyclopedia Britannica.
Oh, nice. And,
yeah, Britannica has a decent number of nerds on staff. You know, we're super into information and curation and archiving. So that's actually sort of a fun job to have when you are a total information geek.
Definitely. Oh, gosh, that's so cool. Thank you for joining me this evening to chat. So being a female-identified Filipina geek, how did you come across the term gatekeeping, or how was it defined to you?
Gatekeeping is a really interesting term for me because the way that I have heard, the way that we tend to hear it and the way that a lot of us have experienced it, I think, is in a very negative context. The idea that the gatekeeper is the one who slams the gate shut, that is very selective about who comes in, and that it's primarily about keeping people out of a community, and that you have to pass all sorts of litmus tests, basically going on a quest in order to prove your worthiness to be part of geek culture, that is not the geek culture that I like. That is not the geek culture that many of us have actually experienced, where being part of geeky culture is about building friendships, about building professional relationships, about being able to explore who we are. And gatekeeping is, when it is done right, when it is done in a positive effect. You know, I'm an editor. I'm a managing editor. And yeah, I work for the board of Chicago Nerd Social Club. I'm a moderator in the group. For all intents and purposes, when you are a moderator, when you're an editor, you are actually serving a gatekeeping function. We have writer's guidelines that we have when people submit to Uncanny. There's a code of conduct that we expect people to adhere to when they're in Chicago Nerd Social Club. And the job of a gatekeeper is to make sure that people are meeting those community standards. When you are doing your job right, a gatekeeper keeps the community healthy. But the way that a lot of us have experienced it is that gatekeepers are the ones who are telling us you're not doing nerd right, you don't like the right kind of fandoms, or you don't know the right facts about the X-Men in order to be considered a real fan. You're a woman, therefore everything that you do, everything that you say you like in geek culture is suspect, because clearly you're doing it just to get attention. That's what my experience of gatekeeping has tended to be in the negative sense. And it's been very interesting realizing that as I've become managing editor for this magazine, as I'm becoming more active in taking leadership positions in these different communities, that is also a gatekeeping function. And I try to keep in mind, I try to keep it very focused on the fact that because I have that responsibility, because I have that power, it is really important to make sure that I am creating the type of culture and the type of community that I want to be a part of, not the type that kept me out.
Did you have experience then when you said, you know, the type of community you want to be involved in, not the one that you got kept out from? Was there anything in particular maybe in your early years that actually you did experience being prevented access to something?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint one thing, because mm-hmm. when you're a woman of color in geek culture, there are all sorts of things where you kind of go into them, and when they happen to you, you're told to expect them as being normal. When you're a woman walking into a comic book shop and you get the quiz from the, you know, from the men in the comic book shop who are like, oh, so you like X-Men, which characters do you know, which how many issues have you read? And then, you know, if you answer all the questions about X-Men, suddenly they'll throw a Star Wars question at you, which is completely out of left field. You were just asking me about X-Men. What does that have to do with Star Wars? But I never thought of those things as abnormal, because I was conditioned to expect it. Of, I'm a woman walking into a comic book shop, of course I have to act, I have to prove that I'm there, because women aren't into geek stuff, which is a lie. It's a dirty, dirty lie.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Because I've been into this stuff my whole life, and I just turned 39 a couple of days ago, and at 39 I have so many more friends who identify as women, who identify as genderqueer, and who are super geeky into so many things. And they comprise the bulk of my friends more than men, if I look at the gender breakdown of who all of my friends are. So many of them are nerds of color. And just realizing, you know, very slowly as I became more involved, as I got to know more people, and also as I started actually reading up and educating myself about issues like intersectional feminism, how all of these things that I accepted as normal are actually, they're exclusionary. They're not, you know, they're creating communities that aren't inclusive. And realizing that there was one, I think the breaking point for me was going to a convention. Oh, gosh, what is it, 2017? So this would be about 5 or 6 years ago, where I went to a panel that was supposed to be about using your nerdy interests as an entrepreneur to, you know, to start a new business, to, you know, advance yourself professionally. And all of the panelists were white men. And when I got up to ask them, you know, what kind of advice would you give to women, because there are glass ceilings, whether you're in the gaming industry or you want to be a writer, there are all these sorts of expectations that women have to navigate in order to advance in their career and to even be seen as legitimate geeks. And their answers were terrible. They were infuriating. And at that point, I sort of looked, I was there with my friend and my husband, and we sort of looked at each other and we're like, why are we letting these people define the discussion on issues that affect us? Why are we not going out there and talking ourselves? Because I had always assumed up until that point that if you wanted to do a panel or have a presentation at a convention, you had to be somebody with a capital S. And lo and behold, when I did some digging and I talked to people, I found out that actually wasn't the case. You could be, as long as you were a fan who could put together a good proposal and get some interesting people to be on your panel, most conventions will love to take your suggestions because you are giving them programming. And that was pretty much the start of everything for me. It was just sort of getting to this point where I just sort of looked at it and I said, pardon my French, fuck it. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. I will open up the goddamn gates myself if you're not going to let me through.
Wow. It's like you're speaking to myself, also being female-identified nerd, that it is true that there is still this sense of geek equals white maleness. And It's often infuriating because there are so many geeks and nerds that are non-binary, non-white, and are actually creating content that a lot of folks don't know are created by those people.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it's mind-boggling to hear that, you know, some of the content that you're like, what, this was actually created by an Asian woman? Like, what? You know? And it's unfortunate that there is still this culture that, you know, grew from Revenge of the Nerds, that this is the epitome or personification of what a geek is.
Oh, gosh. I have so many feelings about Revenge of the Nerds. I think of that link of the essay that I sent you. I had linked to a really good essay that was examining the themes in Revenge of the Nerds and how it is actually, it's supposed to be a nerd story that speaks to everybody, but it speaks very, very specifically to straight white male nerds to the exclusion of everybody else. And like, we having nerd characters that we can all relate to, that's a great thing. But when the majority of the characters that you're given are not like you and you're told to relate to them, and then suddenly like, oh, you know, we have Lilo and Stitch, or, you know, we end up, trying to argue that Iron Fist could have been an Asian. And suddenly it's like, no, they have to be white characters. Otherwise, only a certain set of people will be able to relate to them. Like, the idea of defaults and who gets to be seen as a universally appealing character or creator, what is a universally appealing story? Those are defaults that are maintained and created by gatekeepers. So when we talk about representation, I think it's important that we talk about not just the characters that we see in the works that we see, but as you pointed out, it's those creators, it's the people who are in positions that give them the ability to shape perceptions. Editors, creators, producers, all of those people having a wider diversity within those positions of power is extremely important.
Yes, I think with that, Mitchie, I think we can say that not only should we bring to light the misconception of what a geek is, but I think we should also bring up the fact that maybe more so bringing to light those geeks that don't identify as white males that are actually doing some great stuff in geek culture and like put them up like in a higher platform in a way, you know, and like draw people into like the creations that they're making, you know, like there's so many comics that are coming out now that are queer characters and POCs. And it's just amazing to hear that there's so much content that's being like brought to light, but not a lot of people know about it. And so I think it's really encouraging if we can kind of like take that stand and like, you know, gatekeeping is real, but this is how we can, you know, put an end to it or reevaluate your viewpoint. Because like you were saying earlier, that as an editor, you have certain guidelines, you know, to follow. But in geek culture, I think some of those boundaries can be bent a little bit more too.
Yeah, I think that's on the editorial staff. That's why, again, having a diverse group, having a diverse amount of perspectives when you are in gatekeeping positions, it's a really good check on each other, because there are I am a woman of color, but I am also heterosexual. I was born and raised in this country, so I also am have a higher education. I have a lot of class privilege. There are perspectives that I will miss. So when I work with people who, and you know, and as a woman of color specifically, I am Asian American. I am Filipina. I am not automatically going to understand things that are coming from the perspective of someone who is Black or someone who is Native and Native or Indigenous. It's really important to have all of those voices there to give their perspectives, because if I'm reading a, you know, reading a piece of fiction or reading an essay, I might miss something. And it's good that I can have people around me who know that they can trust me and poke me on the shoulder and just be like, hey, this is something that you might want to give pause and look at it again. It might be problematic. And I really appreciate that. You know, when you have people who are in keeping positions, who are in positions of power, that have that plethora of perspective, it widens the playing field. It means that there are more ways of looking at the stories and the content that is being created. And it just means that we are not limited to things being viewed specifically through the white male gaze. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. But if that is the viewpoint that is dominating the landscape and determining what is a valid story, who is a valid character, that limits things, even if you have creators of color that are doing things. Because if a creator of color has written a story that a white person is not necessarily going to understand the nuances of, and they end up writing it off, we lose that story. Whereas if somebody else, you know, somebody else had looked at it, or someone who had been exposed to different kinds of voices, different kinds of fiction, and was able to pick up on what an author was trying, there is more of a chance that it's not going to be automatically rejected. We all have internalized biases that we are not necessarily aware of. We can do the work to dig into them, but again, we can't catch everything. So having a wide variety of viewpoints is really important.
And there it is, part one of my discussion with Michi Trotta, managing editor from Uncanny Magazine. I'm just Jess. You're listening to a Radio Geekly. I have Jenna and David in the studio with me. Yeah, there was a lot of heavy stuff that she was like bringing to light. And every question that I would throw out to her, it was just, here, this is actually what I've experienced. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, heavy stuff,
it's
but
real.
She was so on point with so many things of just like what that experience is and the frustration behind gatekeeping. And just like, no matter how, quote unquote, like valid she is, like that, mm-hmm. that's literally will always be questioned.
You know? Right. Yeah. And I mean, I was just cracking up how she was talking about when she's walking into the comic book shop and just getting quizzed on, what do you know about X-Men? Well, actually, I wanted to know what you know about Star Wars. You know, and it's like completely different subject, but okay. Like, you know,
yeah.
it's like you had to like show your geek card at the door. Like, here's all my credentials and what I have to.
Oh, yeah. Well, she doesn't need just like a geek card. I feel like, especially like as a woman of color like myself, you don't get to just have like a geek card. You have to have like a geek CV.
Mm.
It's like, well, is it really, or do you only like girl things?
Oh,
and just
gosh.
Like things like that. And she's like, dude, how do you really need my whole CV for the geek? No, I just want to carry my little card, man.
Right. Yeah, so it was awesome to talk with her. And if you listeners out there want to hear more of my interview with Michi, I will be posting part two of our conversation on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/program/radiogeekly. We'll also link to it on our Facebook page and things like that. So, yeah, it was just amazing.
Yeah, thank you, Michi.
So as we continue on with our conversation, I wanted to also bring up some ideas and thoughts around different perspectives when it comes to identifying a geek. We talked about a couple months ago the fake geek girl term and what that meant, you know. And another term that I thought it was interesting and that I actually learned about through Jenna and Tabitha is the term weeaboo.
Oh, weeaboos.
So weeaboo is not a not a Pokemon, right?
No, a weeaboo, okay. You know, an older term for weeaboo is Wappanese. Maybe some people have heard that before. It's a wannabe Japanese person. And so that's, we're going to about to play a segment of, that's a conversation between me and Tabitha talking about weeaboos. And weeaboos are non-Japanese people who are like, take their fandom of Japanese culture to an appropriative, like a culturally appropriative level, to the point that they think that they're Japanese almost. And they also become the gatekeepers of Japanese culture. And it's often that they learn through the culture through anime. So it's really interesting that I've had many, many weeaboos, especially at conventions, try to school me on Japanese culture and what it's like to be Japanese as I just stand there like, well, I'm Japanese. And they're like, and then they do the quiz thing. Mm. Well, do you know this about anime and anime and anime? And I'm like, what the heck does that have to do with Japanese culture? That's like asking me about Mickey Mouse to like understand America. This is really strange, but they really do think that they're the gatekeepers over the food, the whole culture. Mm. So yeah, they just take their fandom to a crazy, creepy level.
Wow. So yeah. Let's take a listen to Jenna and Tabitha's conversation about weeaboos.
The more I'm thinking about like gatekeeping and my own experiences, I will say, like, just going to, like, Guardian Games or just any game store, when I'm at a convention or in any nerd space, I've always felt I've had this weird geek cachet because I'm also Asian. And somehow it could be the stereotype of, like, Asians are, like, the nerds or they're the techie types, that I just have this internalized feeling of having this weird geek cachet. In fact, I distinctly remember, this was about 2 years ago, I went to a dinner and I was friends with the person that organized it, but everyone else there I didn't really know. But one of the people she invited, we were talking and we were talking about geek things, and someone distinctly said that, well, you're Asian, so you should have a penalty for as far as like my geek card and like how many geek points I had. And I didn't know these people and I was being polite, and so I didn't say anything, but I definitely got this like this feeling of like, what does my race have to do with like how geeky I am? Mm-hmm. Or like how nerdy I am. So I would definitely say that is a kind of gatekeeping that I've experienced, that because I'm Asian, it's like somehow Asian and geek culture just somehow go together. I don't know.
Okay, can we talk real quick about this is so Asian specific when it comes to like gatekeeping. Okay, so we got Wizard World coming up here.
Yay.
Right in town. Yeah, I'm excited to go, but when it comes to gatekeeping, I hate conventions so much, because if I have to walk by one more booth where they sell quote-unquote samurai swords that are just like replicas made by some like white dude who's like, oh, but I know so much about it, and I know so, and he like,
yep, I know the exact time you're talking. Yeah.
The biggest thing, this kind of, we've had this discussion, I know, before many times, of the biggest kind of gatekeeping things I see when it comes to Asian culture is the weeaboo culture.
Oh, God. There's so many comments about that.
I just want to grab every weeaboo by the collar and shake them and be like, look, you can be a scholar in Japanese culture and like know every single anime made under the sun and live in Japan for 20 years, but don't you ever dare tell me what it's like to be Japanese and that you know what it is to be Japanese because you've lived there and you've done this and you've done that. I'm like, are you serious? Like,
yeah, I think
you don't know the subtlety. You don't know the complexity.
See, I don't like conventions because those screaming, shrieking weeaboos. Maybe I'm just too old and crotchety, but whenever I'm in like a dealer's hall and I hear someone like, ah, or shrieking, or it's like, I just want to do that same thing. I just want to punch him in the face. Weeaboos just really bother me, because I think it's once again related to Orientalism that like, Japan is this like unchanging, it's exactly like anime. It is this great unchanging culture. And weeaboo-ness just totally denies the complexity, the history, and the nuances of Japanese culture and history. And
well, the and the worst part to me about weeaboos, and for our listeners who don't know what a weeaboo is, that is, as we've been going off about this, a weeaboo is typically a white person, but it's specifically like a non-Japanese person who becomes fanatical about Japanese culture, and they usually discover it through anime, and they just they tend to go overboard to the point that they think that they're Japanese or that they somehow are like they're Japanese because they're so studied and they know everything about it. Because mainly when I think about Asians and gatekeeping, it's always about how white people will tell you like
what is Asian.
Yeah. Well, and like it's weird how white people have turned they've turned Japanese people into cartoon characters. They've confused, as you're pointing out, like they think because weeaboos think they know animes that they know Japanese people. It's really weird when white people are cosplaying in generic kimonos.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's really strange. It's like, why are you just wearing a kimono and then telling me you're cosplaying, but it's not a specific character from a specific anime. So you literally are acting as though Japanese people are just Marvel characters. Like, that is freaking weird.
Yeah.
And racist.
Well, I also remember a few years ago, I went to Otsukimi at the Portland Japanese Gardens. And as you can expect, there were lots of Japanese folks. No one was in a kimono. I wasn't wearing one of my kimonos. But there was another guest. It was a white girl, and she was in a kimono. And I just remember how odd she looked. And I can remember some of the people giving her, like, these looks. And it did make me stop and pause and think. And I could also tell that she dressed herself because...
Oh, God. Yeah, so I guess the message of the kimono conversation is that Japanese people are the gatekeepers. Or no, in America, Japanese Americans are the gatekeepers of the kimono, and white people need to get in their lane again and back off.
Well, I guess I have a question for you. Is there a way for a white person to wear a kimono without being problematic or getting into your lane? If we're going to use a traffic analogy. What do you feel like is...
Oh, that's a good question. Okay.
Well, is it problematic for you that I like kimono?
I don't mind that when people like kimonos and when they appreciate them, because I think it's like appreciating a fine art. And I do think that, you know, fabric art is art. And so that, to me, is appreciation. But I think it's you should do it if you're invited to do it. I think it's okay to ask other people, like, hey, are you wearing a kimono? And then if they are, you can say, like, is it okay if I wear a kimono too? And then if you're going to, you better be uber respectful about it and, like, have someone help you get dressed if you don't know how to do it, and understand that it's not just two pieces. It's a gazillion pieces, and it's very heavy, and it's extremely uncomfortable. And if it's not, you're wearing it wrong. You know, so I think it has a lot to do with being invited into a community so that you're not alienating and so that you're not placing your desire to wear something pretty above them.
To take this back to geekdom, I just recently saw the episode, the TNG, Star Trek TNG episode, Angel One. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I want to say it's either season one or season two. Oh, it's so terrible. The Enterprise crew travel to a women-run planet.
Oh, yes. I remember this one now.
And this whole conversation about, like, clothing reminds me of when Riker was asked to have a private meeting with the administrator of the planet, and he was given, like, the indigenous dress there. And Tasha and Troy were like, you're actually going to wear that? And Riker was saying, for diplomatic things, if this is what I'm invited to wear, I'm going to wear it. And when he said, like, he had to go to this one planet, he had to wear feathers. And I suppose maybe in diplomatic instances like that, then it's okay to wear.
Yeah, I think that's the good answer. It's like, be diplomatic about it. Don't be selfish about it and just be like, I want to wear this thing. Take other people's feelings into consideration and realize, you know what it's like? It's like it's like a whole bunch of Girl Scouts wearing their troop, like their uniform with their patches and blah, blah, blah. And then imagine just one day some girl shows up who didn't deserve any of the patches. And it's just like in the uniform that she bought at a cheap Halloween costume store and is like, hey, you guys.
Look at me.
Look at me. And it's like,
oh, you didn't earn any of that.
Yeah, you didn't earn any of that. Like, you know, and like you're just showing up and like just expecting camaraderie while appropriating the thing that we're doing at the same time. Like, you better understand that there's symbology that has to do with people's identity. Mm-hmm. Back in your lane.
Though I have to admit, I have a couple of kimono and I have a couple of katana. Just for pure transparency.
Tabitha, we need to go. I need to go to your apartment, and we need to go clean that thing out.
Oh, Jenna, do you need to go through everybody's apartment now?
Just specifically Tabitha's. So just like, Tabitha, girl. You know, but while this was playing, we were just talking a little bit about, like, you know, when are things okay, when are things aren't okay, and. You know, I joke about that with Tabitha, but at the same time, Tabitha and I have a lot of discussions about when are things appropriate, you know, the difference between wearing like an actual kimono versus like buying something that you get at like the Halloween store. And one thing I've actually always really admired about Tabitha, because she's a self-professed weeaboo at certain points in her life, is that she really understands kimono craft. Like, she's way nerdy about it. She can like tell you the significance of the collar and the sleeve and like everything about it, you know. So even though she does own stuff herself, she really tries to understand what it is that she's owning. So I see a difference between like cultural appropriation versus like appreciation. I really do appreciate how Tabitha does it, because Tabitha is actually Taiwanese. So you know, so she's not Japanese, and she's always like, but I just really love it. It's so beautiful. And I'm like, you know, I like that you appreciate it.
Yeah. And that's something to be said too, because it's one thing when you're just self-proclaiming and expect to know everything about a certain culture, and then it's one thing to want to learn about a culture and actually show respect for it, even though you don't identify as someone from that culture. Mm-hmm. That was great. If you're just tuning in, we are Collective, a Radio Geekly. We're talking about gatekeeping, and specifically as it affects the POC community. And we are going to continue on this conversation, I'm sure, after the airwaves have commenced at noon. But for now, let's open up the conversation just to kind of continue on and see about these different perspectives. And as we move along, we're going to be closing out here in just about 10 minutes. But I wanted to bring up some other events that were happening in and around KBOO and Portland. Speaking of which, this Monday evening, if you have desire to join our collective, we will be having a meet and greet here at the KBOO studios at 7:30 p.m. We invite all of you to come and join us. There will be snacks. There will be some FaceTime with the other collective members, and then taking your info in terms of what you would like to contribute to be a collective member, what that means. So please come down. That's this Monday, February the 6th at 7:30 p.m. here at KBOO. And in a couple weeks, a few of us from the collective are going to Wizard World Comic Con. And we're going to be talking to just several people in and around the convention, sitting in some panels. I hear some well-known celebs are going to be there. My favorite has to be Matthew Lewis, because I'm just a big Harry Potter fan. So when I heard that he was going to be on the lineup, I got really excited and kind of did a little happy dance at home. But there are other folks that are going to be there. Theo Rossi, Tatiana Maslany, John Barrowman, Alan Tudyk, Nichelle Nichols, Eric Estrada, all of and more people. So we're going to be there all weekend, just wandering around. Last year we did have a booth, but I think we kind of found out that we like to wander and talk to people face to face, and then actually having them in the walking by our booth. So Yeah. David, did you have anybody in mind? I know that you were looking at some of like the artists and vendors and stuff.
The whole slate, I was just going through the list and there's going to be a lot of local people. And I thought some people just looked really interesting. And I think they'd be more accessible, people you could talk to and see what they relate to. Especially a lot of locals, people who are doing their thing. And, you know, if anything, I could see this more like they're at their starting point. You just named a bunch of names of people who are, you know, they're at their celeb top.
Right.
I'm more interested in like the people like us, you know. Well, so just see where they're coming from and see what they do and just see what's going on.
Yeah. There was a couple people that I saw that on the tab that looked really interesting. They're, they call themselves Gaming Gear and they focus a lot on like tabletop gaming. They're local. And so I'm really encouraged to kind of just chat with them because I am a recent tabletop gaming enthusiast. And so it'd be cool to kind of get their ideas and perspectives on like, do you guys have a dice tower? Like, how do you, you know, where do you put your gaming mats and things like that?
That whole gaming industry, it's amazing. Like you go to the thought and care you put into these things and then you got to test it and they're pretty amazing. I got a friend who's basically giving up his career because this is what he wants to do, to go become a game designer. He's like, that's great. You know, you can, good luck. And there's gaming clubs you can go to.
I love how that's like a viable job these days. Like, yeah. It's just become so popular.
In Portland, there's some big game designers here in Portland. So
right. Yeah. So that'd be really cool to talk with them and to see what they're doing too, because like we were talking about earlier, you know, there's so many things that are happening like right now and not a lot of people know about it. So it's like actually going out and finding that information and talking with these people and sharing what they're doing to kind of bring to light. So I'm really excited to go check that out. Also, if we're going on comic conventions and things like that, the Emerald City Comic Con is happening in March up in Seattle, and that's going to be fun. I've heard from folks that they prefer that one to Wizard World because it's a little more locally focused, that they kind of bring in more artists and creators that are within the Pacific Northwest area, so that would be really cool. Yeah, but there's just so much stuff. I'm excited because now it's a new year, so more conventions are restarting again, and it's just going to be so much fun. Jenna, did you have any other events that you're just jazzed about?
No, I've been like so stuck in doing work that I'm just like, oh my God, I need to figure out what all the events are because I just realized that like, oh my God, Comic-Con's coming up and I got to get my cosplay together.
Right.
So
yeah,
if I can just get it together for Wizard World, that would be awesome. So look for the person who is in a hastily thrown together costume with a microphone.
Okay.
Come talk to me because I want to see what everybody else is wearing.
There you go. That's awesome. David, anyone's that you're looking forward to?
I don't know. I mean, that's the wrong words. I can't think of any. I could plug there's an open house coming up with Open Signal
in
town. That's the 25th of February. They kind of revamped. That's Portland Community Media, another place I'm associated with. And they'll, you know, it's a place where artists and people can come in and create. They're trying to open it up to people, use the equipment, do your thing.
Very cool. And in KBOO related news, next week we're starting our winter membership drive.
Woo-hoo.
Starting from February 8th through the 15th. If you are a member and you would like to increase your membership, that would be a perfect time to. Or if you thought about it, you know, I've been listening to KBOO quite a while, never thought about being a member. Now is the time to do that. So
it's time for me to get that shirt.
Or the hoodie.
Yeah, the hoodie.
The hoodie. It's cold outside. Might need something with a hood on it.
We need to get like the KBOO puffy down jacket.
There you go. Maybe it'll be blue like our fuzzy blue van.
Ooh,
there we go.
Does it come with orange headphones?
It could. That could be included. We'll have to talk to our membership director to get those ideas to her. But yeah, so membership drives coming up, opportunity for you to donate to your favorite community radio station. And your donations actually allow us to do this kind of programming. It's your donations that keep us on the air. So please tune in. Please feel free to donate. If you want to donate now, you can definitely go to kboo.fm. And on the homepage there, on the top, there's a button that says donate. Make your donations count. And the all of that is included to provide you all this content, all of this stuff that is volunteer-driven, community-building, just amazing radio that we do here at KBOO. And so I want to say thank you to everybody for continuing our conversation about gatekeeping. And I really want to encourage everyone that to get educated on what it means to be a geek, but in a way that you can understand coming from different perspectives. You can self-identify in several different ways, but it actually is a bigger token if you come to an understanding of who else is identifying somewhat differently than you, but you can come to the same term and actually have a conversation. Mitchie was mentioning that, you know, there are times when she can have conversations with people that might be coming from a different perspective, but speaking in a way that is respectful, but then also understanding that you can have disagreements and it's okay. You know, there can be those people that are on the fence about whether or not they like Rogue One, but you can still come to the conclusion that I like certain Star Wars movies and you like certain Star Wars movies, and that is still okay.
Oh, no, we gotta argue about this all day.
We can still have our lightsabers. I prefer to have a green one and you want to have a blue one. That's totally cool. But to just have that understanding. And I think that was kind of the main impetus for us to have these series and have these conversations be started, because it's great to have an assumption of what you think people will like and not like, but it's a totally different perspective when you actually hear from those people that are feeling oppressed, that are feeling pushed and gatekept.
And erased,
exactly. So please keep yourself informed. Go to the resources that we've posted on our Facebook page to get educated on things and talk to people and learn. We can stand here and be on our soapboxes and say, no, my way is better than yours. But in the end, that's not going to draw a happy community. So we want to encourage everyone to be informed and embrace the diversity that we have here. So thank you to everybody. Thank you, David and Jenna and Riona, for stopping by. This has been a Radio Geekly. I'm just Jess. Stay tuned at noon for Moving On with Dawn Jacobson. And it's going to be guest host Ed Melnick today. So thank you so much for tuning in. And you are listening to KBOO Portland. And we will catch you next month. Take care.
It's time for the KBOO News at noon for Friday, February 3rd, 2017. The Trump regime has wasted no time in overturning consumer protections that were put in place after the massive economic crash of 2008. Earlier today, Trump signed an executive order to overturn the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. The act was passed in 2010 to bring accountability and transparency to the financial system, to end the idea of too-big-to-fail banks, to protect the American taxpayer by ending bailouts, and to protect consumers from abusive financial practices. The biggest Wall Street banks and investment firms have tried to overturn the law since it was passed 7 years ago, including many of the banks that defrauded millions of homeowners and consumers in the lead-up to the 2008 economic crash. Also this week, the Trump regime overturned an order by President Obama that stopped the completion of the Dakota Access